From Portland, Oregon, this is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rock and Roll. Coming up this episode, traditionally, one of the first structures built by a Jewish community isn't a synagogue or a school or even a good deli. It's a mikveh, a ritual pool. Portland's community mikveh, Rachel's Well, turned 7 years old at the beginning of this month. To celebrate the occasion and to learn more about mikveh in general, I spoke to Naomi Malka, an expert in matters of mikveh. Naomi managed Washington, D.C.'s community mikveh for nearly 16 years and consulted with the team that built Rachel's Well here in Portland. We discussed what a mikveh is, what it's used for, and why it can be a truly profound spiritual experience. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, presenting the Sussman Shanker Scholarship Fund. Applications are now open for one of Portland's premier college scholarships for Jewish high school seniors. To learn more and apply before the March 3rd, 2025 deadline, visit jewishportland.org. Now, here's Naomi Malka. Naomi Malka, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thanks, Rachni. Good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. So tell me about your Jewish journey.
Well, I grew up in Seattle on Mercer Island. My family went to Herzl Ner Tamid Synagogue. When it came time to have a bat mitzvah, my parents asked me if I wanted to go to Israel for the summer with a youth group tour or if I wanted to have a bat mitzvah at Herzl. And I said, well, can I go to Israel with my best friend? And they said, sure. So we joined this youth group and we went to Israel. We were 13. And this was before the first Intifada. And it was a really peaceful, spiritual place to be in the old city. There was a lot of magic. It was an amazing trip that really sparked my interest in Judaism and in Israel and set me off on this journey. When I came home, I joined a different youth group, BBYO. I went to Camp Solomon Schechter a couple times, and definitely for Shabbatons here and there. When I went to college at UCLA, there was no room in the dorms, so I lived in the Jewish student bight, which was like a communal house on Fraternity Row, and that was really a formative experience for me to live in that kind of Jewish community. I spent a year in Israel working on two different kibbutzim and learning Hebrew. Also very formative, very intense to work in factories or work in agriculture in Israel. It was hugely influential in my Jewish journey. After that, I moved to San Francisco, and I worked for the Jewish National Fund there. I was teaching Hebrew school at the same synagogue where Rabbi Alan Liu was the rabbi, and he was one of the first people to talk about Jewish mindfulness, and that really was interesting to me at that point. I there actually became a bat mitzvah, finally, by learning trope and learning to read Torah. I had an adult bat mitzvah with a group when I was 26. And then a few years later, I went back to Israel for the first year of graduate school. At the end of that year, that's when I met my husband, who is from Portland. And we actually were in BBYO at the same time, but we didn't know each other then. Meeting his family also was a big part of my Jewish journey because I had known about Sephardic Judaism. I never really realized the richness of it until I saw it in his family and understood what it has in common with Ashkenazi Judaism, the way that I grew up, and what is unique about it, and also how diverse it is. So sometimes I joke that when I got married, I converted to Sephardic, because like people who convert to Judaism from other faiths or from no faith at all, it's like learning a new language, a new culture, a new set of norms, a new set of taboos. The food and the music are different, and I really drank that all in. And negotiating, like, my identity as an Ashkenazi Jew in a Sephardic family and raising kids in this family to, you know, choose what their Jewish identities would be has been really, really interesting over the years.
So just let's, for the benefit of our listeners, we'll get down to some very basic questions. What is a mikveh? And traditionally, sure. What is it used for?
A mikveh is a gathering of living waters, meaning that there's a flow or a tide to it. So an ocean can be a mikveh, a lake with a tide, a river that is deep enough where you can immerse in one vertical motion. Those are all kosher mikvehs. Stagnant water is not a kosher mikveh. And Jewish communities build indoor mikvehs to offer safe and private places and, you know, weather appropriate places mm-hmm. to immerse. And so a kosher mikveh has halachic specifications as to how the water will be collected and how it enters the tank of tap water. There's a mixing of the rainwater that's collected and the tap water that all has halachic measurements. There are always in indoor mikvahs 7 steps that go down, which from an architectural point of view, you know, sort of gets a person to the right depth to immerse in that one vertical motion. But also 7 is a big number in Judaism. And 7 represents a sense of wholeness and completion. Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the uses of mikveh that we associate with very traditional practice rooted in the Torah, the real mitzvot that are associated with mikveh?
Okay, so there's 5 traditional uses of mikveh. Mm-hmm. 1, for married women immersing on their monthly cycle. 2, for brides or grooms before their wedding. 3, for people who are converting to Judaism. 4 is to prepare spiritually for Shabbat or a chag, a holiday. And the 5th is some people have the custom, the minhag, of immersing their dishes before they bring them home to a kosher kitchen.
All right. So outside of those practices that are mandated by halacha, what are some of the more modern ways that the Jews have incorporated mikveh into their spiritual practices?
That's such a great question. When we look at the times in the Torah that immersion is called for, they all have to do with a transition. And transitioning usually from some state of chaos to some state of order. And moving into a sacred space or a sacred time, one of the steps that somebody would have to go through is to immerse in water. And so the way that I and other people in the new mikveh movement, of which Rachel Zwell is clearly a leader, is to refer now to mikveh as a ritual of transition. So there are B'nai Mitzvah students who are feeling the call to immerse because this is their transition into becoming an adult. There are people who are undergoing gender transition who are using this as a way of sanctifying that journey. There's a whole spectrum of people who are on a fertility journey and immersing before trying to conceive or during a period of infertility or after having given birth or after weaning. Those are kind of woven in with traditional reasons to immerse, yet some of those ceremonies are quite up to date and modern, and they really feel like very relevant, and the language around them feels relevant, poignant, emotionally accurate, everything that you would hope for in a personal ritual. There's also people who are immersing around graduations, retirements, moving, all kinds of one-time transitions or things on a cycle. So anniversaries of something. Doesn't have to be a wedding anniversary. It could be the anniversary of someone's conversion to Judaism, or the anniversary of a yard site, which is an anniversary. Mm-hmm. Also, anniversaries of years of recovery.
What is it about the experience of mikvah, of immersion in this sacred water, that is so meaningful and powerful for marking transition like that?
Everyone has a relationship to water. All cultures have a relationship to water. All cultures have stories about water, and this is ours. And we are all entitled to do it. We are all invited to do it. And there are a lot of sensations of water and being in water that are powerful, like immersing completely, getting everything totally wet. It's impossible to do it mindlessly. It's a very intentional experience because it's a full body ritual. And we don't have so many of those in Judaism. I mean, a lot of our rituals are words or, you know, small motions like lighting candles and, you know, waving your hands over the candles. But this one is different because of the vulnerability of it, also because it's private. In the Rising Tide movement, we give people the opportunity to immerse completely by themselves. Mm-hmm. Unless they're coming for conversion and they need a witness for halachic reasons, everyone is offered the chance to do this mitzvah by themselves.
Which is unusual, it's unusual because so many mitzvot are communal by nature. Like, even to the extent you need a minion to say certain prayers, but this one is a very solo activity.
Exactly. And that's part of the power of it as well. Yeah. Part of the vulnerability of it and the power of it. I think it's also powerful because a lot of us have hang-ups about our body and we don't all feel like we look like we should, or our bodies are the right shape or size or thickness or thinness. Yet the message of the mikvah that I found in my years working at the mikvah and immersing every month for almost 20 years was that your body is holy. And that is countercultural to the other waters we swim in, mm-hmm. right? To our commercial consumer culture that we're in that tells us that we're imperfect and we need to buy this or that to become perfect, or we change this somehow or color that or, you know, wax that, whatever it is. In the mikvah, your body is the ritual. Your body is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. And that is, I feel like, inherently an empowering ritual for a lot of people.
Absolutely. So what makes Rachel's Well unique or unusual in the landscape of American mikvot?
Rachel's Well is a pluralistic, trans-denominational community mikveh, which means that anybody who is Jewish or who is converting to Judaism can immerse for any reason. And there are only about 25 or 30 other mikvahot like that mm-hmm. in the U.S. out of, I think, 450 or 500 total.
Of those 25 or so mikvahot, how many of those are owned by and operated by their Jewish federations the way Rachel's Well is?
Rachel's Well, as far as I know, as of now, is the only federation-operated mikvah in the country. And it's a great model for other cities and other communities. Usually there are private donors and some foundation money and a little bit of membership dues from other participating institutions or congregations that will be using it. But most of the time it's attached to a synagogue. If it's freestanding, you know, that land may have been donated. Rachel's Well is really operating as a model for other cities. And I'm referring people all the time to Caron to talk about why Federation decided to do this and how it's done and how it's done so well. I know I was involved a little bit with the architecture of it and just seeing mm-hmm. the plans. And what I really loved about that process was the building intentionally has a path through it that represents, on an aesthetic level, this ritual of transition and this experience of transition that we're talking about, because people don't walk in there or walk out the same way. And that flow through the building, it's a really powerful statement. Also, the location of it in the forest, it's so beautiful and it feels so connected. Another thing that I love about Rachel's Well is that it reflects a feeling of the Northwest. And I believe all indoor mikvaot should reflect their surroundings and the sort of landscape around them. And one in Miami should look really different from one in Chicago. The materials and the colors and the textures of Rachel's Well are just so perfectly reflective of Portland and the Northwest. And we know that rain is such an important part of the mikveh and of the Northwest. And so it also highlights that as well.
For someone who hasn't had the experience before, what is immersing in a mikveh like? Not only the nuts and bolts process of you do this step and then this one, how it works, but also the sort of spiritual experience of it.
Going to the mikveh involves a set of preparations, and the goal of those preparations is to remove any barriers between the water and your body as it is. And so most indoor mikvaot will have a counter full of toiletries like nail polish remover or alcohol wipes or Q-tips, things like that to help you get all the schmutz off your body. And there's almost always a shower. Sometimes there's even a bath to soak in. And everyone is encouraged to bathe before they go into the water. If you're immersing by yourself, you can go down the 7 steps into the water, and you may have a laminated card with the words of the blessings. You may have a song in your heart that you want to sing. You may have a melody that you want to sing the blessings to, depending on the time of year or an upcoming holiday. You may just say the blessings out loud. But in any case, you're immersing 3 times and you're saying 1 or 2 blessings. 1 if this is a regular practice for you and the blessing starts like all the others, Baruch Atah, and then ends with V'tzivanu al ha-tevila. Tevila is immersing. And people take their time doing these immersions and saying the blessings. They can take their time. Some people are too nervous and they just want to get it done and get out and get dressed again. But other people really soak for a while, float for a while, hum, sing, and it's their space for that time. People who are converting to Judaism will usually do their immersions in earshot of their Beit Din, of the 3 rabbis who are overseeing their conversion. And so in that case, they will have a witness to their immersion who just is there to affirm that the person went all the way under the surface of the water and that they said the blessings. If they needed help with the blessings, the witness can also help them with those words. The Shehechianu would be added to the Al HaTevila blessing for an immersion, and that's Shehechianu for everyone is quite a tongue twister. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes people need help with that.
I certainly would.
Right. And being a witness to these moments is really holy work. And the volunteers who do it and the people who train to do it are giving of themselves in such a beautiful way.
So yourself as someone who has a regular or has had a regular mikveh practice, what is that experience like spiritually?
So immersing in the mikveh one time can be a really important spiritual experience. And immersing on a regular cycle is very different, though. In the same way that if you did yoga once, you might think you understand it and have like gotten all of its benefits, or if you ran a mile and then think you've like unlocked lifelong heart health, or if you, you know, write one journal entry and like think you've represented your entire self there. These are disciplines, and this is a spiritual discipline for some people. Mm-hmm. And so at my first immersion, I had no idea what would be ahead of me. And I also hadn't fully committed to it at that point. I was trying it, and I was committed to trying it and seeing how it worked and what it was like. But I didn't know the sort of benefits that I would get from it, or the spiritual wisdom that it would, the way that it would speak to me, and the messages that I would receive when I was in the waters of the mikveh. And I didn't realize that it would become a source of healing for me, and that I could talk about that also with people in my community and offer it to other people as a source of healing for them, for, you know, lots and lots of different things. I mean, there were moments when I was thinking of the beginning of life on earth at this moment of creation, and how these very waters that I was in had not been created. They were always there, and I was feeling connected to the very beginning of life on earth, that my breath was part of that, that this water that was touching my skin was eternal. There were times when I invoked my ancestors' presence by saying their names and really feeling hopeful that they were somehow blessing me while I was in the water. There were other times that I was able to just talk with Hashem and sort of go over the highlights of the previous month and ponder some of the questions in my heart and set an intention for the coming month and sort of whisper the truths of my life in the water. And those were highlights. I mean, those were like when I really felt like I hit the octaves. And it wasn't always like that. And it's not always like that for everybody. But that's why I encourage everyone to begin a practice, because that's when the multiple meanings of it are able to be revealed.
That's really profoundly powerful. Naomi Malka, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thanks, Rockney. It was great.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. Thank you so much to Naomi Malka for her insight, and to our associate editor and mikveh manager extraordinaire, Karon Blau Rothstein, for helping bring this episode together. You can learn more about the history and impact of Rachel's Well in the November 6th edition of the Jewish Review online at jewishportland.org/jewishreview and at the mikveh's website. Both are linked in the episode notes. If you like this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find our show, subscribe to get our latest episode every 2 weeks, and tell a friend. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. Don't forget, you can get the latest news from Portland's Jewish community by subscribing to the Jewish Review online at jewishportland.org/subscribe. The Jewish Review Podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is, of course, Karon Blau Rothstein. Special thanks to Daniel Berger. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rockney Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, all the best.